Everybody, welcome in to the Lakers Collective. Four-game winning streak for the Lakers. What does this mean moving forward? Luka Doncic, kind of good at basketball. We'll talk about him. We'll talk about LeBron, his role with the team. DeAndre Ayton, is he really back? Lots of stuff to get into. He's Jovan Buha, Jason Timpf. I'm Trevor Lane. Happy to have you all here. Guys, how you doing?
What's up, guys? It's good to see you. Part of me, my voice is really struggling today. I am feeling better. I promise. I'm feeling better. But this whole thing is just taking it out of me, as you can imagine. A lot of things trending in the right direction. Luka's playing the best basketball he's played all season. I think he's been fantastic. Austin Reeves in full rhythm. LeBron's best game as a third option. Several of the role players starting to round into form. DeAndre Ayton playing extremely well. I even have to talk some playful shit to Jovan about the starting lineup having some success. So, it's a good day.
Man, JJ tried to rage bait me, but he pulled the reverse Uno with plus 18 in 14 minutes, brought that lineup to a whopping minus 25 in 115 minutes on the season. But hey, it worked against the Chicago Bulls. We'll see if it gets some run against Denver on Saturday.
Wow. That's I'm hoping that Marcus Smart is back for Saturday's game, because yes, JJ did go with they you could see it last night, even just defensively. They missed Marcus Smart. That lineup is good enough to beat the Chicago Bulls, but I don't think it's going to be something that they're going to move to moving forward. And as you noted, it has been a big net negative on the season. But I do wonder how much if they kind of inside the room joked a little bit and laughed when they submitted that lineup card and went, "Oh, Jovan's going to hate this."
I got some texts from some people. I will say that. Leave it there.
To me, it's really simple. We talked about it in the moment. Jovan's right. That should not be the starting lineup when they're healthy. I think everyone agrees now, even the Lakers. That's why it would be Marcus Smart. If you guys remember back when this was happening, one of the things I kept saying is, like, they can play better. Like, it was a combination of a flawed lineup construct and they were playing like crap. Like, so it just came together to provide that crazy lineup data. The big one to me was, like, when you're big and slow and you're not playing hard, you're going to get your butt kicked. That's just how it works. Luka has been phenomenal on defense for a few weeks now. And then last night I thought was one of LeBron's best defensive games in a long time. So, like, if you piece together two of the flawed defenders in that group being the three forwards, those two guys just being way better on defense than they were to start the season – and the simple fact that this is the first time Austin and Luka have both, like, been healthy and in rhythm since early December. So, like, it's a confluence of several things. I think that lineup would have big issues against the best teams in the league, even when they play their best, which is why it shouldn't be their starting lineup. But that was more or less what I'm sure the team thought they would look like when they would play. It's like, well, if they all play hard and do their jobs and play defense and Rui's a knockdown shooter and everyone else has this skill that they can piece together, it could do better than it had done. And so last night was at least an example of what that looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was good to see them find some rhythm here with the three, with Luka, LeBron, Austin together. And we'll talk a little bit more about that when we get to LeBron, about the role moving forward, what was said after the game, kind of what this potentially looks like for the team here. Luka, of course, goes for 51. He's on a heater all game long. He's unstoppable. Big thank you to Modest Bouzelis for talking shit to Luka, because that got him going. He poked the bear, and Luka said, "Okay, I'll bring it. You're going to get clawed," and he was absolutely phenomenal. Luka now 41% from three in each of the last 2 months. He's been absolutely on fire. Jovan, I saw you were talking on X just a minute ago about how Luka needs to be more in the MVP conversation. Where do you stand on that right now, and Luka's play of late?
He's been incredible lately, but I think this recent stretch of the last four games, he's averaging something like 40 points a game, 9.5 rebounds, 7.5 assists, 51% shooting, 46% on threes. So this little pocket here, and also the defensive playmaking, this I think has been his best stretch of the season. But I even go back to, like, I mean, he just won Player of the Month in January, a month ago. and he's in the same conference as Jokic and Shea. So by the nature of that, that means he outplayed those guys for that month. And last night, before my show, I was just curious and started diving into some of the numbers post All-Star break. And he's right there with those guys. I think two things that they have had an advantage over him with over the totality of the season have been efficiency and some of the on-off numbers. So for example, like the Lakers for the entirety of the season have only been 6 points per 100 possessions better with Luka on versus Luka off. With Shea, it's plus 10. With Jokic, it's plus 15. So I know people will bring up the record without Luka, but when you actually look at like the performance of just when they're on the floor versus off the floor, those two guys have made a bigger impact over the entirety of the season. But post All-Star break, plus 22 points per 100 possessions with Luka on versus Luka off, which is more than Jokic at plus 17 and Shea down at plus 8. So he's almost triple Shea there, and with a notable lead over Jokic. And then you look at the efficiency, higher effective field goal percentage than Jokic post All-Star break by a couple percent. They're basically tied in true shooting percentage, then tied with Shea in effective field goal percentage, and then Shea has the edge in true shooting by a few percentage points. But like, he's basically been as good. If you look at, I mean, the counting stats are the counting stats, and his counting stats are always monstrous. But I think if you were nitpicking and just kind of splitting hairs, but between those three, they have had the advantage over, effective field goal percentage, true shooting percentage, some of the on-off stuff that they still lead him in basically every advanced metric. So those have been some of the things where you could say they've had the edge. But Luka's been just as great as those guys, I think, post All-Star break. Again, extrapolating it out to like January, I think you can make a case he's been in a similar tier. Now, I think Shea is going to win MVP. He felt like he had that walk-off moment against Denver. That was a duel of the ages between Shea and Jokic, going shot for shot down the stretch there. Shea hits a couple of walk-offs and OKC ends up beating Denver. Felt like that was the moment he became the decisive favorite in the MVP mix. And unless he doesn't qualify due to games missed, he's going to win MVP. Jokic is still a monster in every advanced metric. I mean, he leads Shea in every metric basically. So I think there's a strong statistical case he is still the best player in the league. And, he will probably finish second. But I think Luka needs to be in this mix for at least third, if not second. And people are talking about, I see people not having him in their top five. I see people talking about him 7, 8, 9 out of the top 10. Like, I just think it's ridiculous. And so I just wanted to highlight it on my show. Wanted to highlight it here. Like, he needs to be more in this mix and not at the bottom of the next tier of the Wembys and the Cades and the Jaylen Browns and Donovan Mitchells. Like, he needs to be at the top of that tier. And I think more in the mix with Jokic and Shea.
I think some of that is and this is one of the things that I really dislike about the MVP conversation, is that we allow team success to bleed too much into how we ultimately decide on who wins the MVP. We look at it as though it has to be the best player on the best team. It's only the number one seed or the number two seed. It's rare that we see like a fifth seed or something. We've seen it with Jokic, but it's rare that we see a fifth seed or something like that wind up getting it. So I think, especially when a lot of these conversations were happening, I know the Lakers are the three seed right now. A few days ago, they were the sixth seed. There has to be an understanding that if you look at the Western Conference right now, 3 through 7 is separated by 2 games. Like, there isn't much of a difference between those teams. So I think some of the discount on Luka is because the Lakers were sitting in the sixth seed for so long. They've not been that clear upper tier team. And so they're using that as a disqualifier for Luka. And I don't think that's the way we should be looking at it, given the way that he's played, especially the way he's played over the last few months. Post All-Star break, he's been even better. This is the version of Luka that we've been wanting to see. This is an MVP level player. I think you make a good point that nobody's saying he should win it. SGA is a very deserving winner, and it's going to be very difficult to defeat that moment that he had the other night against Denver. That was an incredible moment. But Luka should be higher up in the conversation. He shouldn't be simply dismissed in the MVP talks. And we saw last night how damn good he can be and what he can do to absolutely take over a game. So I agree with you 100%. He should be in that conversation, whether it's third, second, fourth, whatever. You shouldn't be banishing him to 10th in the MVP race or beyond like we see some people do it. I think that's a little bit of a Lakers tax kicking in, and I think that's also putting too much emphasis on team success. And we're putting, look, Cade Cunningham is great, but I'm not putting him ahead of Luka just because the Detroit Pistons are the number one seed. Jason, where do you stand on all of that?
I think you could argue Luka as high as two. I think he has a good case there. To me, everyone's fighting for second place. I think there's a chasm for me between number one and the rest of the field. Like, you know, I've always looked at MVP as a combination of three factors. Like, who's the best player in the world? Who's the best player on the best team? And then who's the most valuable player to their team? It's a combination of those factors. And when you look purely at like the who's the best player in the world discussion, it's really only a three, maybe a four-man race, depending if you include Wemby in there. But it's Luka, it's Shea, it's Jokic, right? And obviously, Shea has this big feather in his cap that they've been the number one seed in the West. And I think he deserves a lot more credit for that than he gets, considering how banged up Oklahoma City has been this year. He's basically been their only available ball handler for the majority of the season. Obviously, it's a great defensive team, but it's also been a bunch of guys in and out of the lineup. Caruso's been in and out of the lineup. Chet's been in and out of the lineup. Isaiah Hartenstein's been in and out of the lineup. Now, they're a very deep and talented organization, and they've been fielding very good teams despite that, but not juggernaut-type teams. And so I think that's a feather in Shea's cap. If you look at the best player in the world conversation, again, it's Jokic and Shea and Luka. But Jokic and Luka both have had down stretches. We talked about it with Luka, obviously, after the trip to Slovenia. Around the All-Star break, there was this weird stretch, about a 10-game stretch from early February to early March, where he scored 30 points just twice in 10 games. We talked about that on the show. Jokic, when he came back from his knee injury for like 3 weeks, couldn't hit a hook shot, couldn't hit a floater, couldn't hit a three, was playing bad defense. So like for a few weeks there, Jokic was just bad. And I say everything's relative. All the stands get super sensitive about this. It's relative. Jokic was bad relative to the best player in the world standard. Luka was bad relative to the best player in the world standard. Shea has been at that standard all season long. You cannot point to a week where you're like, oh, Shea was kind of bad that week. So to me, Shea's a runaway in that respect. And so you can argue any of these guys as high as number two. You could argue Cade. You could argue Luka. You could argue Nikola Jokic. You could argue Wemby. The one guy I really push back on is Jaylen Brown. He's the one guy that, like, I don't think has belonged in that conversation. To put it very simply, he's not as good a scorer as the best scorers in the league in efficiency or in volume. He's nowhere near as good of a passer as the best passers in the league. He's a very capable defender, and that's a weapon for the Celtics in the playoffs, but that hasn't been a highlight of his season. And the Celtics have been the on-off numbers are not very good for him. So like I don't think Jaylen has a case, but I think you can argue any of those other four guys for number two. The last thing I'll say is, like, it felt to me around the All-Star break, to Jovan's point, that Luka really turned it on defense. And the offense was lagging just a little bit behind, but the offense has come around gangbusters here in the last four games. And let's set the MVP discussion to the side for the second, because that really is just fluff. Who cares? Like, yeah, those awards are given out, but I haven't cared as much about MVP ever since the Russell Westbrook MVP. It's become so much of like a narrative based type of thing. The reality is, to me, is like, if you have one of the dudes, you can go win the trophy. And Luka in these last four games has been playing at a level that is every bit as high, if not higher, than even Shea has been at this season. That's the level that Luka's been at. It's been a combination of he's taking much better care of the basketball than he did his last like 20 something games. He's been averaging about like 3.3 turnovers, which is like a really good number for his usage. So he's cut down on his turnovers. He's been hitting his step back three at a high percentage for a while, and he's been stroking the step back three the last three, four games. He's playing really hard on defense. He's averaging 2.5 stocks in this four-game stretch, or 2.5 steals, excuse me, in this four-game stretch, 3.5 stocks. I think his like kind of like center field defense in the middle of the floor, like reading interior passing sequences and jumping passes and getting steals there, has been super impressive. I just can't say enough about how amazing he's been in this four-game stretch. And frankly, this version of Luka is the guy that's in these conversations with Shea at the top of the league. This version of Luka is the guy that can take the Lakers to the promised land. And the last thing I'll say about it, I know I'm going long here, but I feel the need to say this. I've been incredibly impressed by Luka's off-court leadership during this entire season, even when he hasn't played well, even when the team has struggled. And you can add an additional layer to this now that we understand that what was going on with him behind the scenes. But every single post-game presser, it's been self-reflection, accepting responsibility, helping keep the team's eyes on the prize, not falling into, like, there were stretches of the season where, you know, myself included, the national media was all over him. And in those stretches, he responded by just doing his job, handling it professionally in post-game pressers, like strictly looking at like off-court leadership as like a face of the franchise. I've just been really impressed by him, and I've gained a lot of respect for him on that front. But I think he's ramping up to play a dead serious playoff run. His level of intensity and focus has been off the charts too. I'm just super, super excited to see what we get from Luka the rest of the way.
Yeah, I love that you brought up the defense. I think there are a lot of things too. Like obviously the steals, the blocks, those will pop off of the screen. Those will pop off the box score. But I also think there are things that don't show up on the box score. There have been a couple times recently where he shuffled his feet quickly, cut off a baseline drive, forced the defender to retreat. Little things here and there. This doesn't mean Luka is suddenly a great defensive player. You need to shift him into this lockdown category. That's not Luka. That's not what he's going to be. But we continue to lump him into this just turnstile, awful defender category. And that's not what he has consistently been. There have been moments, and you can make a low light reel of Luka Doncic blowbys and things like that, but you're missing so much of what he's doing defensively on a pretty consistent basis now. Again, doesn't mean he's a great defensive player, but he is a much better defensive player than I think he's getting credit for, because people continue to slot him in as this horrible turnstile of a defensive player, and that is simply not what he is. And that's the same, and the same holds true for Austin Reeves. I think both guys have been playing better defensively lately. Luka's been phenomenal with his shot, been shooting the ball well. I love the competitive spirit that we're seeing from him. Luka has had an excellent, excellent run here with the Lakers, and you got to hope this is something that he can continue doing, because he is playing MVP caliber basketball right now. As Sarah notes here, Luka not MVP this year is fair, but seeing Boogie say he shouldn't be first team all NBA activated my fight flight response. Yeah, and that's where, especially when we get into like slotting Jaylen Brown up there, that very much falls in the category of, it's like nails on a chalkboard to me. It drives me crazy. Team success over what the individual player is doing. That's a team thing more than anything else, I think, with Jaylen Brown.
Agreed.
All right, let's get into, so Luka goes for 50, LeBron comes back, and after the game, it's pretty clear LeBron was in a third guy role. The usage shows it. His usage was lower than Austin Reeves' shot attempts. Austin had 20 shot attempts. Luka had 31, LeBron had 13. Now, some of that shot attempts were artificially inflated in last night's game because the possessions were inflated due to Chicago just bombing up and down the floor constantly. But nonetheless, the lion's share goes to Luka, then Austin, than LeBron. That was the pecking order. Talked about it after the game. LeBron saying, I know I've got more to my game, but I want to do what's going to help the team win. JJ Redick mentioned they've had these conversations. Jovan, is this it? Is this the blueprint? Is this the path forward here for the Lakers with LeBron being the third guy offensively?
I think so. We've talked about it on here, and I know Jason brought it up last show when we were previewing what this could look like with LeBron back. But I think the best way to just function with the big three is I think Austin should be the number two. LeBron should be the number three. Austin has been the more efficient scorer on the season. I think he's been the more efficient and effective shot creator between the two. So if you, and Lakers are now 19-3 when Austin scores 20 plus, like there's a very clear correlation of when Austin has a certain usage and a certain involvement offensively, the Lakers are just a different offense. And I also think LeBron's passing is something that like LeBron's a better passer than Austin. So there's way, like we saw, in general, there was a shift with LeBron being more of a screener, more of a roller, more of his offense came off of cuts and off ball stuff, getting out in transition. Like he's been doing that all season, but it was just less, let's go to LeBron in the post, or let's have him maybe try to do an inverted ball screen, or even have a big come screen for him. And like just less on ball usage, more quick stuff, and then him off of the ball. But one of the big things that they shifted within some of those second unit groupings was when it was Austin and LeBron together, it was Austin's running the show. Austin's bringing the ball up. Austin's running pick and roll. And LeBron is functioning off of that. And then they also mixed in some LeBron on one side of the floor and Austin coming off of weak side screens, whether it was a flare screen or a pin down, whatever. And then them trying to create opportunities for Austin off of that and leveraging LeBron's passing. So I thought this was the optimal balance. Should Austin be taking 7 more shots than LeBron every game? No, I think it depends on the context of the matchup, who's got it going that night. Austin was incredibly efficient last night, 13 of 20 from the floor. He had it going. Luka had his best offensive performance as a Laker. Season high 51, Laker high 51, tied his career high with 9 threes made. So when you have those two combining for 81, I think it makes sense for LeBron to take an even bigger step back. Like I don't think this is going to be the exact usage or shot distribution moving forward, but I think the proper pecking order is Luka, Austin, LeBron. But again, if there's a mismatch and a team just doesn't have the personnel to defend LeBron, then you spam LeBron post-ups or him as a screener and roller and get him going in the middle of the floor. Like this does not have to be black and white. There are shades of gray here where we need some nuance and some context. But I really liked the approach last night. It was a bit of a slow start, quiet start from LeBron, but I feel like from the middle of the second quarter on, he was great. You saw him making plays defensively, igniting LA getting out in transition. Again, some of those cuts and off-ball actions to get going around the rim. Like, this is what the Lakers need to do moving forward. I want to see what this looks like against Denver, because as we talk about their success against teams above 600, they have yet to beat one of those teams with the big three all playing. It's been either two of the three or one of the three in those games. So this is like the big test coming up on Saturday of, okay, you had the warm up against Chicago. You didn't try defensively or as a unit for most of the game. Like you kind of coasted on that side of the ball, gave up 130 points. Now you're playing the best offense in the NBA with one of the best players, if not the best player in the NBA. This is a different test. And how does the big three fare in this matchup? We'll see on Saturday.
I think it's important as well to differentiate when we talk about pecking order. We're talking about offensively the role, yes, right? Who's going to be not so much impact. And I think of the three too, it's important to note that of the three, LeBron is the most capable of being in the role that we're talking about and having a big impact in terms of doing things on the glass. Luka's been great rebounding, but LeBron's ability to rebound, to defend, to get out in transition, to be a cutter, LeBron can do all of these things combined at a greater level, I think, than Luka or Austin can. So your net as a team can be a bigger positive if it's LeBron in that role. This isn't about like Austin Reeves greater than sign LeBron James. We're talking about fitting the puzzle pieces together in a way that's going to allow the whole group to reach the highest level of success. And I think LeBron in that role is the way to do that. Now, again, as you said, though, Jovan, there's going to be important context. Some games that may not be the way to go. We saw it the other night, right, when the Lakers played the Orlando Magic. Hey, the Magic are going to leave a guard on DeAndre Ayton. Great. All right. Tonight, the offense is going to run through DA. We're going to get him the ball a bunch of times. He's going to have 20 plus points, and that's how we're going to score a bunch of easy buckets. Some of it will be dictated by the defense, what's available. Of course, if LeBron has plus matchups, then feed the ball to LeBron and off you go. But in general, I do think that what we saw last night is at least the beginning of a blueprint moving forward. It was great to hear after the game, JJ Redick and LeBron James both acknowledging and doing so with a lot of grace that this is probably the way it's going to need to be in order for the team, which is bigger than the individual, to have success. Jason, what did you think about the way the roles played out last night? And is that the blueprint moving forward? What tweaks would you make to it for a more difficult matchup coming up tomorrow against Denver?
No tweaks. I'm not going to lie to you guys. This whole situation has been pretty frustrating for me to watch because, as I've said, like there's been some legitimate discussion to have about LeBron and his role on the team. But so much of the discussion has been based in like a non-existent world. This world where LeBron is like stealing usage from the stars and stopping them from playing well, which is like complete and total horseshit. Like this recent stretch, of Austin and Luka playing well and in rhythm and healthy together at the same time. That's the first time those two guys have been healthy and in rhythm since early December. In early December was when LeBron was ramping up after skipping training camp. So, like, even if I look at this recent stretch, the idea that they're better without LeBron, the LeBron, Austin, Luka trio has been destroying people since Austin came back. They're outscoring opponents by 12 points per 100 possessions in almost 200 minutes, despite the fact that Austin has been out of rhythm. Austin, in the first six or seven games after LeBron joined the team back in late November, early December, Austin averaged 30 points a game. There was no version of this where Austin was struggling because of LeBron. It's straight up not based in reality. It was abundantly clear that as soon as Austin actually got his rhythm and found his legs, that LeBron would step back and seed usage, just like he did back in late November and early December. And, you know, I could get nitpicky, and this is where they're actually, this is what's so frustrating. So the discussion surrounding LeBron and usage, like the comment from Chris Finch, an actual NBA head coach, to get up and say it's a complicated usage puzzle. That's literally not what's happening. That, like, it's like the dumbest thing I've ever heard an NBA coach say.
He's stoking just, the fire there. He knows the narrative.
What he's doing. It's exactly what he's doing. He's playing mind games. But, like, the funniest thing about it is, like, there's actually a discussion to have about LeBron, which is like, hey, dude, we can't have you mailing it in on defense. We need you to play defense. Or, hey, dude, we need you to run the floor, like up and down in transition offense, transition defense, like some stuff like that. Those are like valid points that we could have that had to do with what the team looked like when we were talking about Jovan's starting lineup, for example, back in those days, back at that point in time. The truth of the matter is LeBron does so many things that can help this team without the damn basketball. He doesn't want the damn basketball. He wants Austin to run a million pick and rolls. He wants Luka to run a pick and roll, a million pick and rolls. That's literally actually what he wants. Okay. And like what you saw last night is exactly the role that LeBron's been dreaming to play of in his late career, which is let me spot up off the ball. Let me make all these connective passes. Let me run action and make reads with the team and help set up the offense. Let me be active on the offensive glass and let me focus on the defensive end of the floor. The valid criticism is sometimes LeBron doesn't want to do the dirty work in the regular season. That was the valid criticism, not the stuff surrounding the usage. That stuff was not based in reality. Looking at last night's game, I thought he was a little rusty and out of shape in the first half. He got back cut by Leonard Miller out of the right corner on that one transition possession. He gave up a layup. It was kind of lazy. Had a couple of ugly turnovers. But I thought his entire second half, was like dominant as a role player. He was like bullying dudes on the offensive glass, making connective passing reads. I thought he was fantastic in transition on both ends, running back in transition defense, running the lanes in transition offense. He made like a Draymond low man rotation. I don't think I've seen him do that all season. he stepped over and went vertical. It was the one where they got the offensive rebound back, where he went vertical and he got a block. He was like jumping passing lanes in the middle of the floor and getting steals and sparking fast breaks going the other way. I think he might have run two or three on-ball possessions the entire second half, a couple of right shoulder fades. He made one, he missed one. But like he was deferring to Austin. He was like helping set Austin up with some catch and shoot looks through action when he was coming off like flare screens and stuff. I thought LeBron was great. And like if I have one piece of criticism to offer him from last night, there were two plays, one in the first half, one in the second half, where he was situated on the opposite wing and Rui was in the opposite corner. And as the action developed, LeBron's man stepped over to help, or they did like the classic low man rotation where low man steps over and the LeBron man drops to Rui. And the pass goes out to LeBron on the wing and the guy does not rotate from the corner up to the wing. And so if he would have just shot the ball, you know, that would have been the right read in that situation. And in both cases, he like rifled one-timer extra passes to Rui in the corner who was guarded. And then like the plays died in those two sequences. So like my one thing is like, I don't even think LeBron needs to shoot 40% on catch and shoot threes, but he's got to take them. And I think he's capable of hitting in the mid 30s, which is exactly what this team needs. If he can just do that, like literally if he would have just taken those two catch and shoot threes on the wing, I would have been perfectly fine with his offensive approach the entire game. But again, I think LeBron, literally one of the greatest winners in the history of the league, a guy that is a proven competitor, just like JJ was talking about after the game. His name has been dragged through the damn mud in the last couple of weeks because people are obsessed with this lineup data, which has a ton of context that can easily explain what was going on. And they very clearly have been very good with the big three since Austin came back from his calf injury. So much of the criticism was based outside the realm of reality. And so I felt kind of bad for the way he was covered in that stretch. And I think he just showed that, like, he just wants to win. He literally just wants to go out there and help the team win.
I think part of the idea that we've seen out there that LeBron is this egomaniac that will not accept a third guy role. This is very much what he's been wanting for years. I mean, we've talked about it before, but it's part of why they traded for Dennis Schroeder. It's part of why they traded for Russell Westbrook. He's wanted to not have as big of an offensive burden. So while we talk about, hey, this is the role best suited for LeBron James, it's not like they're pushing LeBron kicking and screaming into this role and demanding that he do this and acquiesce to their demands here. That's not what's happening. LeBron will very much be on board with doing this. This is just the style of basketball, I think, that's going to be necessary for this team to reach their peak. And LeBron being, and his comments after the game are just go right along with what he's always said over the course of his career. He's a team first guy. It's the same thing that he's gotten criticism for, right? When we think about LeBron not taking the last shot at times and how people have said, oh, well, you know, Michael Jordan would always take the last shot or Kobe would take that last shot. LeBron has always been a team player and he's going to move the ball. Even if that means breaking his double digit scoring streak and moving the ball to the open shooter and letting Rui Hachimura hit the game winner, he's going to do that because it's the right play for the team. He's very aware of what the team needs and he's very willing to fill in whatever role the team needs. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. I don't think he gets enough credit for what he did last year after Luka arrived and the role that he took, particularly in light of the departure of Anthony Davis and the way he changed things defensively. So, yeah, there's the idea that LeBron is going to have to be pushed into this role is incorrect. That said, the role, the way that the dynamic is playing out, I think, is the way it's going to have to be for the team to reach their ceiling. But that's not that LeBron is an unwilling participant in that. I mean, Jovan, I think this is going to be the way this all ultimately comes together. And some of it is, yes, Austin Reeves got to be playing his best basketball, but LeBron James is the linchpin to this with his ability to do all of the other stuff. And that it's just important that, as Jason noted, there are times where his defense can slip and wane and things like that. The exciting thing is that won't be the case come playoff time. You know, you're going to get a very locked in version of LeBron James. So Jovan, I'm optimistic that this is going to be the path forward here for the Lakers and they can hit another level in the, what, 3+ weeks before the end of the season.
I am too. I left last night really encouraged because, again, there's a lot of discourse, a lot of narratives going into last night's return for LeBron. And I thought he fit right in with, like, just think about this, right? Like, a couple of the big talking points where Austin's playing his best basketball of the season without LeBron, DA is playing his best basketball of the season. And LeBron returned and those two guys kept playing great basketball and LeBron actually like took a step back. So both of those guys could be more involved offensively. So it's like, is this going to be, again, the shot distribution, the usage distribution every single night? I don't think so. I think there will be nights where LeBron, maybe it's more of a 2A, 2B situation, or maybe LeBron is the number two, Austin's number three. And like, you know, if they're playing, like I think about OKC and yep. Some of Austin's struggles against OKC and some of LeBron's success against OKC and the ability to attack them in the post and operate in the paint. That's a matchup where, okay, now you force feed LeBron and Austin, you take a step back. You're more of a facilitator, off ball shooter. So I think we, especially the last like 15 years of media coverage, we become obsessed with the hierarchy in a big three and who's got to sacrifice and who's got to take the step back. I think this is not black and white, that there's going to be a lot of context and nuance within all of this. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we have to even label LeBron necessarily like the number three, but I thought he came in and he fit into what the Lakers were doing. He was additive across the board. He helped with the rebounding. He helped with the defense and he helped facilitate offensively and was slotted in as tied for third on the team in shot attempts. So I thought he was great last night once he settled in again, kind of like that late second quarter stretch.
And they're really going to need him doing those things tomorrow against Denver. That's going to be a big, big test. Let's talk about DA. DeAndre Ayton, since coming back from, he missed a game against the Pacers. Since coming back, the scoring efficiency has been there. That's no question. Been doing a great job there. But the bigger thing is we've seen a major uptick in energy. We've seen him doing work on the boards. He's been a major force on the offensive glass last couple of games. Now, we could just dismiss last night's game against the Bulls and say, well, they don't really have a physical presence in the middle. True, but he also played very well against the Minnesota Timberwolves. I like this version of DeAndre Ayton that we're seeing a heck of a lot more than the guy that we saw for a while there. And even last night, he said when asked about what changed, Dan Wojcicki asked him about what, you know, what he thinks of the team's energy and effort level. He thinks that it was him picking things up in terms of his energy and getting up to the level of the rest of the team, and that that has changed things for everybody. So these are all positive signs from DeAndre Ayton. Now, this is a small sample size here, but Jason, what are your thoughts on the version of DeAndre Ayton that we've seen lately? And is this sustainable for him?
Yeah, you know, I don't want to sit here and pretend like I'm jumping on the Ayton bandwagon or anything, but I do want to point out that I do think this is a different version of Ayton, even than the guy from the beginning part of the season. Ayton is extremely talented. And as we've talked about, when things are going well for him, when the circumstances are shaping up in a certain way, like even when I saw someone right when we came on the stream, and they mentioned that Tim Legler had pointed out that when Ayton gets at least 10 touches, there, you know, the Lakers have a certain record or something, and that he was going to relay that information to JJ. Like, I know what JJ is going to think when he hears that, which is like, well, Ayton's touches are dependent on the opponent game plan, which we've constantly talked about. Like, it's dependent on them being in a drop coverage look, not doing a ton to tag the roller, and guys like Austin getting downhill a ton, which is a big part of why Ayton's rise has kind of coincided with Austin's rise here. Where I think it's been different, because again, Ayton's had games where he's had 20-10s, you know, early in the season. There is like an anger to the way he's playing, like a visceral intensity, a physical intensity, like him trying to jackhammer that tip slam yesterday, or like some, he had an offensive rebound where he went through Rudy Gobert in the Minnesota game a couple days ago, where like he jumped into Rudy's space and like landed on top of him. It's just like a monster rebound. And like, I want to piece that together with the quote from Dan Wojcicki, because the quote from Dan Wojcicki, what's fascinating to me about that is it's a profound bit of self-awareness from a guy who's famously not self-aware. And, you know, as we talked about on the show, we just call it like we see it. So in the same way we talked about, you know, Luka on the high end and we talked about Luka on the low end, we talked about Ayton not having self-awareness when things like the Clint Capella quote came out. That was a lack of self-awareness on Ayton's part. I thought that quote to Wojcicki was an example of Ayton looking in the mirror and going, wait, this is my fault. And like I'm the one that's not meeting the intensity of this group. This group is trying to ramp up to compete in a first round series, and I'm the one that's holding them back right now. He accepted that personal responsibility, and that is new to me. That is a different side of Ayton than what I've seen in the past. And so when I look at the physical angry aggression mixed with the self-awareness, I'm at least leaving the door cracked open that this could be a little bit of a wake-up call for him. And mainly just because if you really look at his career trajectory and where he came out of Phoenix, and obviously after Phoenix, when that situation went south, that was not a situation where he was like looking in the mirror, so to speak, and acknowledging why things went the way they went. And then he went to a losing environment in Portland. And so one of the things I'm hoping is that just him being around LeBron, him being around JJ, him being around Luka, Austin, a bunch of savage competitors that are very much like, let's do things the right way every day. I'm wondering if that's starting to rub off on him a little bit. And, you know, this is the thing. Like, I'm not ready to say he's the center of the future. That it would take such a larger sample size and probably a dominant playoff run for me to feel that way. But I have the door cracked into thinking that that's an actual possibility now, because I do see a legitimate change in demeanor in Ayton that I think is different than even the guy we saw early in the year. This is not just Ayton's talent coming back to the forefront. He is playing mean and angry and physical, And I think that that, like, did you see that drop step dunk too, where he like dislodged the dude with his shoulder and then went up and jammed it? I'm like, I don't think I've seen him do that this season. Like it just, there's a level of physical aggression with him that I think is different.
This is the angry Aiden that we all got excited about on media day when he was talking about playing with anger. Jovan, your thoughts on what we've seen out of DA so far.
I want to echo everything Jason said. I think there has been an increase in the physicality, I would say. And I mean, like, if you look at a lot of his rebounds over the last few games, they've been primarily offensive rebounds. Like, even last night, 6 of his 10 rebounds were offensive. He had a bunch in the Minnesota game, bunch in the New York game. So he's really been a force down there in the paint. If I had to, so I'm with two minds with Ayton here. I think there's been a lot of real progress. And to Jason's point, like, I want to see this continue. I do think there's been a lot of the focus and like compliments with Ayton have been on the offensive end. And I think there's a reason for that, because I think the defense has continued to kind of be meh. And again, like, even putting up the, what did you have last? He had 23 and 10 last night, but 6 offensive rebounds. So only 4 defensive rebounds. Now, there was not a lot to rebound with how poorly the Lakers were playing defense, but like, there still continues to be a lot of like guys beating him off their, like, small. I mean, Trey Jones had a drive, like, just line drive on him, lays the ball up over him. And it's like, I would just like to see a better defense, basically, what would be like the final piece for me from him, where offensively, I think the last few games, 10 out of 10, no notes. With the finishing, with the aggression, with the physicality, with the offensive rebounding, the catching, he's been better with his catching, and he's not getting stripped. Like, again, 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10, whatever you want to say offensively. The defense has still left much to be desired, in my opinion, and that's like not going to necessarily show up on the box score, but for the season, they are almost 5 points per 100 possessions worse defensively with him on. Post All-Star break, that's actually gone to 8 points per 100 possessions. So that's been trending in the wrong direction. I think we need to see more on that end and the same level of engagement offensively as, you know, we're seeing defensively. And then I'm really intrigued. Like, to me, his biggest game of the season is Saturday. I think, and, you know, maybe to a lesser degree, like Monday and Wednesday, you could put that like second and third, but he had a stinker in the first half in the first game in Denver before he exited with an injury. He had a stinker of a shift in the second game in Denver. Jokic was dominating him early. He comes out, I mean, he gets yanked early because he's getting his butt kicked and then has an injury, doesn't return again. So he's played Denver twice. He's exited twice with injuries. He's had 2 rough first halves against Denver. And now he's the only player the Lakers can rely on at the 5. Jackson Hayes just got imaging on his back. JJ said TB, like, they don't have a timetable when Jackson's going to return. Maxi Kleba is going to be out a bit, JJ said. So they're down to DeAndre as their only real playable playoff level center. He needs to have a big game against Denver on Saturday. That, to me, would especially if he can hold up defensively, that would make me feel like this shift is real. But if he lays another egg against Denver or has a really disappointing defensive performance, that's where I think it's fair to you know, kind of question this in terms of like the longer term fit. So I want to see how the next few games go with Denver and Houston twice. I remember he didn't have a good game against Houston on Christmas either. But I will note, it's trending in the right direction, and I've been very pleased on the offensive end. I just think he also needs to apply some of that physicality and aggression on the defensive side.
And that's certainly the more important side of the ball for DA. It's, can he get it done defensively? Can he rebound the back? The points are nice, but the points to me are kind of the bonus, right? It's what you need is the defense, the rebounding, the aggressiveness there, the screen setting, all of that kind of stuff. The Clint Capella stuff, let's face it, is the requirement for DeAndre Ayton. And it's going to be a big test against Denver, against Houston. He's got to show well in those games. They're going to need him. They're going to have a tough time winning if DeAndre Ayton does not play well in those games. This is the biggest test of the season for him. I do like that he's on the upswing right now, that he's playing better basketball over the last week here and now coming into this matchup. But if he's not good against Denver, if he gets dominated by Houston, it's going to show, and that's going to be a problem. And I don't think necessarily the box score is going to tell the entire story about what DeAndre Ayton does, whether it's a success or a failure in his performance, because it's not all going to be about the points that he scores or even every rebound that he grabs. There's going to be a lot more when it comes to contesting shots at the rim, altering shots. Those things are going to be important for DA. The energy he provides out there on the court, going to be big for DA in those matchups. So I'm happy that he's on the upswing. Absolutely. Give the guy praise, especially given how he's played prior to this. And I hope that this carries over into these matchups against Denver, against Houston, because not only is it big for DA himself, when we're looking at his contract moving forward, the perception of him around the NBA, all of those sorts of things, but his ability to play at a high level in those matchups, it's part of why the Lakers got him, in order to have a true big to throw it after getting their butts kicked in the paint by Minnesota in the playoffs last year. And it's going to be critical for the Lakers if they're going to get those wins against Denver and against Houston, which if you look at Denver's schedule, there's not a lot of losable games left on the schedule. I don't buy that San Antonio and OKC, the last two games of the season, that they're even going to be playing any of their guys at that point. If the Lakers have any hope of staying ahead of Denver, they're going to have to hand them a loss and get that tiebreaker, push a loss onto their record tomorrow. It's a massive game, and DeAndre Ayton is going to need to have a big one.
Yeah, because the Lakers have that brutal Eastern Conference road trip after this, too.
Exactly.
At Miami, and is it at Detroit for the second one? There's a couple of really tough ones.
At Houston's, then after the second Houston game at Miami, so that's a tough back-to-back.
Back-to-back on the road, traveling.
Orlando, Detroit, Indiana. So, yeah, that's a... The only easy game on that is Indiana, and Indiana still has the bones of that finals team. But yeah, Detroit is Detroit, Houston's Houston, and then Miami and Orlando are both playing really well right now. Mm-hmm. You never know when someone's going to go for 83.
I've talked too much about that already. Let's not go down that path. All right. Let's go here. Sam said, we'll get into our super chats to close out the show. The Lakers collective big three is healthy. Well, Jason, you're healthy-ish, right?
Yeah, exactly. Working on it.
They're talking about us, right? Luka, Bron, and AR are also healthy. Let's finish the season strong.
Agreed, yeah. Sam.
Let's go. Jovan's playing hard, just got to hit his open shots.
Oh, wait. All right. We have to. I didn't touch on this on my show, and I think we need a moment of appreciation for the 1 second that the all white lineup played last night.
Did they play last night?
They played last night for one second.
Literally 1 second, and JJ.
No, it was not in garbage.
Put in Rui Hachimura.
It was what? Drew, Timmy, Jake, Luca, Austin, and Luke. Yeah. So, shout out to JJ.
What did you think of that in that moment? Did you think JJ knew what he was doing in that moment?
I don't. It worked because they've been going with the Luka Austin shift, deeper into the first quarter. And then just based on who was out, Jake and Luke were the top two bench guys, and they were the two guys to come in. And then Drew Timmy is the backup center right now with no Jackson and no Maxi. So he played it for a second, quickly was like, oh, put Rui back in. So that was hilarious.
Okay, let's go here. You know what? Let's talk real quick about Jake LaRavia. Where are we at on LaRavia? Jason, what do you think about LaRavia's shooting? I've been of the opinion that it's in his head. Where are you at with him?
The whole thing that I would talk about with Jake is none of this matters as long as you hit a couple of them in the playoffs. So just keep trusting your work behind the scenes. You got to take them. We can't have another guy who won't shoot them. Some of the stuff in the middle of the lane, I feel like he's a little helter skelter, a little rushed, a little out of control. But he's got to keep taking them. And honest to God, it doesn't matter if he shoots 29% the entire season, if he shoots 35% in the first round. So my whole thing with Jake is I would just be like, oh, sweet, I got another 5 weeks to figure this out. So 5 weeks, that's probably a solid 20, 25 days where you can get a good shooting workout in. So you got to think you can get a solid thousand reps and at least a few thousand reps that can hopefully round you into form to the point where you can knock him down. Just stick with it. Coach ain't bailing on you because you play every single game and you play hard and you do your job. So you're going to have your shots. Just got to keep working on it behind the scenes. Like anybody who's ever been in a shooting slump knows it can be a maddening process. You can have stretches where you shoot extremely well behind the scenes, like have workouts where you shoot 80, 85% on threes for like 100, 150 reps. And then you go into a game and you go 0 for 6. It can be extremely frustrating, but you just got to stick with it and trust your work, and it will eventually open like floodgates.
Yeah. I don't buy that this is just what he is as a shooter now.
Yeah, and I think part of the Jake discourse has been he was labeled as a shooter coming into joining the Lakers because he shot 42% last year on threes, even though it was on, I think it was on like 2.4 attempts, something like pretty low volume. And even within him getting traded last year from Memphis to Sacramento, there was a pretty big split there in terms of the percentages. But look, the last four games, you know, Lakers four game win streak, they've been plus 13 with Jake on the floor in three of the four games. The fourth game, they were plus 8. So like, I know he's not contributing offensively the way that people have hoped for and the way that he had at times earlier in the season. It's he cannot be like blowing wide open dunks and layups and like the threes. I think there's going to be some variance there, but like around the rim, he's got to be better at times. But he is constantly getting them extra possessions with the offensive rebounding. If you play him 15 minutes, he's going to get at least two offensive rebounds out there. He's a switchable, multi-positional defender, and he just does all these little things with the screening, the cutting, connector offensively. He's constantly having, like, he doesn't really stand out 2-3 assists, but like he's always in that 2-3 assist mix of when he's out there, he's helping grease the wheels offensively. So I think his role will be tailored down a little bit in the playoffs, but he's been additive overall, and I think like he's the epitome of, yeah, like the offense isn't great with him and he needs to be better on that end, but he just does so many little things that collectively add up to him being a positive.
And unfortunately, I bet you, a prediction. I bet you he shoots the three pretty well next season too. Like I just think he'll go into the off season and be like, I got to get my shit together and figure it out. Because especially alongside Luka, he just gets so many looks.
And unfortunately, when you're missing shots the way Jake is, that's like the loudest thing that you can struggle with. If you're struggling with your off ball defense, the casual fan is not going to pick that up the same way they're going to if you are missing shots. And so I think there's been an outsized negative backlash towards Jake LaRavia that's missing the little things that he's doing out there on the floor. I think you just got to trust that the shooting is going to come around and understand that he's doing a lot more than that, than just shooting the basketball. He does a lot more to help the team. Ultimately, yes, the shot does have to come around, and you got to get that figured out before the playoffs, but he's got some time to do that. And in the meantime, he is doing other things out there on the floor to help the team. This question came in. Mamadou said, hey, Trevor, does Luka deserve MVP if we finish third? Also, what's your thoughts on our bench? So we already talked a lot about the MVP thing. I don't want to redo that conversation. If they're third, yeah, I think that helps Luka's case. But ultimately, I still have SGA ahead of him. Just Luka should be in the mix, should be in that conversation. As far as the bench, you know, last night the Lakers scored, 142 points, and the starters scored 137 of them. The bench scored 5 points. Part of that is, you know, your slotting changes when Marcus Smart is out, Jackson Hayes is out, even Maxi Kleber are out. So that's going to be important context to that when we look at the Lakers bench. But I think the bench has gotten a big boost from Luke Kennard. He did not shoot well last night, a rare poor shooting game from him, but the bench has gotten a boost from Luke Kennard. He's given them another element offensively. Are they as deep of a team as we would like to see? No. And that's something that's going to have to be addressed this offseason. But I do think that even when the rotations shorten come playoff time, as long as everybody's healthy, JJ is going to have at least a few options to turn to off the bench. I don't expect, guys, that we're going to see a JJ Redick five-man half like we did last year in the playoffs, because I think he has more legitimate options to turn to this time around.
Never say never. We'll see how quickly he loses trust with some of the guys on the bench. I don't think so. But I will say, like, in some of these games, like even last night, I mean, he basically played seven guys.
Yeah.
Vando, you could, like, I don't know, 10 minutes. Where do you count that as like a fringe rotation. I mean, Vando got like a couple of shorter shifts. And speaking of Vando, like Vando, I guess apparently is the 10th man. And like when they're fully healthy, probably won't be playing in the playoffs based. Like if there was ever a night with no Marcus to play Vando more, it was last night and just didn't get much run. But yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to play five guys. I can't envision a scenario though of like if it's a rough center matchup and DA and Jackson are both not playing well, that already shrinks the rotation to like eight guys. And then I think Vando and Jake, if they're both not contributing offensively, that kind of shifts it down to six. And then there might be some matchups where Luke can be picked on defensively. So like I could see a scenario in which a rotation gets whittled down to basically the small ball group of the big three plus Rui and Marcus. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but like, I don't think that's improbable.
So I'm looking at it thinking Jackson Hayes is a much better version of Jackson Hayes than we saw last year, to the point where I think we do see him in these. Now you're mentioning maybe a specific matchup that isn't working out well, that could potentially happen, but I think that Jackson at least has been dependable enough off the bench that we're at least going to see a six man rotation, and Hayes is going to get his opportunities. Ayton will continue to start. I could see a scenario where Kennard winds up getting bullied defensively and JJ has to shorten things quite a bit. But it really felt like last year he just had zero trust in anybody outside of those five players. Maybe it changes come playoff time. Maybe I'm wrong, but to me, it seems like there's more trust built in with at least a few of the bench players, even if there isn't it's not OKC level depth or anything like that, certainly.
I was more like laying out the doomsday scenario, but I think they'll go eight deep in the playoffs.
All right, let's go here. It seems this team is getting their defensive principles in check with Luka and AR carrying the offense and guys starting to make outside shots. We can disappoint some teams come April and beyond. Jason, what are the Lakers' odds of being a threat in the playoffs, being not a first round out in five games in the playoffs this year?
So I've had them as a third tier contender for the majority of the season since myself and you guys and everyone else kind of accepted reality a few months back. But I think post All-Star break, there's been a level of like, let's see if we can find our own ceiling as a team, especially on the defensive end. And the offensive stuff is so much more just about rhythm and guys getting healthy. But on the defensive end, I think there's been a level of attention to detail and intensity as they've tried to round that out. I've said most of the year, my goal for the Lakers is just to have a respectable showing in the postseason, like either win a first round series or at the very least compete and threaten to win a first round series, like push a team to six or to seven, one of those good middle Western Conference teams. And this recent stretch has been the first time, because as we've said, there's been so many times where the Lakers went on a little mini winning streak or had a good week, but it was because they played a bad team and then they play a good team and we'd be all reminded why we don't believe in these guys, right? This recent stretch is the first time that I've been more open-minded about them entering into that second tier again, meaning that they're as good as the, you know, kind of like the Minnesota, like Houston, those teams that are the other teams in the middle part of the Western Conference. So frankly, like at this point, I do think the Lakers will be competitive in a first round series like that. And that was my goal. I think the Lakers will be competitive. Will they win? So much of that depends on who they play. You know, there's matchups to consider. There's health to consider. Like, is everyone, are they going to just cruise from here all the way to the postseason without a significant injury? Because if that happens, I think they're a good threat to win a first round series because of how good they can be offensively when Luka and Austin are in rhythm. But if one of them gets banged up and gets dislodged from that rhythm, that could change things. So it's I wouldn't commit to anything, but I think they're on the right trajectory to be a competitive first round playoff team, which I think is a big improvement over where we saw these guys a couple months ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. All right, let's finish with this one, and then we'll let Jason go rest his voice here. Jovan, a question for you. Keeping that mustache, huh?
This was a running joke on last night's stream that my facial hair, I was growing it out. You know, gotta get the Eastern European stubble going here.
There you go.
I can't grow the beard like Jason, so I got to show I could grow a little bit.
There you go. There you go. We'll have to be a playoff mustache for Jovan, as long as the Lakers stay alive.
Listen, I'm not going to shave again until the Lakers lose a game. How about that?
Oh, okay. All right. I like it.
I got to be careful with this now. Now they're going to win the next 10 games.
Yeah. You're looking at the schedule ahead, aren't you?
He's not shaving till June.
The Lakers are about to go on a long win streak here. What would Luka need to realistically do to win MVP this late, or is it even possible now? I don't want to be pessimist. I don't think it's possible.
I think if they won out, it'd be a conversation, but I think Shea's got it.
But I mean, really, like, what do they have left? 16 games, something like that? Like, you want to win 16 straight?
If they won 16 straight and Luka averaged 40, I would never count
right?
it out.
We're getting into fantasy land.
Yeah, we're getting into, that's the point. It's like, there's, I haven't checked the odds in a while, but last time I checked, Shea was like minus 1,000 to win MVP. Like, he is a runaway favorite right now. I'll look it up while Jovan's talking.
Yeah, I mean, I just, this is at least, yeah, I'm not going to say this, the sports book to give them, free promo, but this one I'm looking at minus 900 for Shea, plus 1800 for Jokic, plus 1800 for Wemby, plus 5,000 for Cade, plus 15,000 for Jaylen Brown, plus 20,000 for Luka Doncic. So this is a prominent sports book, and he is sixth in their MVP odds by a pretty wide margin. So yeah, I think, I mean, look, if he, this four game stretch, I mean, he could average 40 the rest of the season. I don't think that's likely going to happen. I think on the high side, you know, maybe 35 is within, I mean, he's right there already with, you know, 33 plus the season. If he averages like 35 on similar efficiency, similar on off impact, I think he could get second. Unless Shea suffers an injury down here and down the stretch here and misses due to games missed, I don't see a realistic scenario that he jumps to higher than second. And even then, I think if Jokic is eligible and Wemby is eligible, those guys will also be in that mix. So I think, but point being, the whole point of what our discussion earlier was, like, he needs to be more in this mix. And I think sixth is too low, insane. Especially that's at the plus 20,000. That is insane.
Especially when you factor in that Laker odds usually are a little inflated in the other direction because of all the public money. Like, Jaylen Brown being over Luka for MVP is insane. Like, Jaylen's had a good season, but people are not. I don't agree with that.
I agree. It's not. It should not be that way. I think in terms of SGA not winning it, he's played 55 games. I think he has to play in nine or fewer for him not to win it at this point. And I do not want to wish an injury on anybody. I hope he stays healthy the remainder of the way. But I think that's honestly what it would take whether it's Luka or anybody else, for anybody else to get a realistic shot to win it. I think it would take SGA being eliminated due to injury. Now, somebody did mention, well, Luka could win the scoring title. Yeah, right now he's averaging 32.9 points per game. The next closest is SGA at 31.8. I think Luka probably will win the scoring title in the NBA this year.
Yeah, he will.
All right.
It was good to see you guys.
We'll head out to the weekend. I have saved the super chats we didn't get to. I'll put those together at some point this weekend and get that out, because we have a few from last show as well. And we'll talk about some of the things that have happened over the weekend. We'll do that probably on Sunday. But thank you, everybody, for joining us. If you haven't done so yet, please make sure you hit the subscribe button on the YouTube channel. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts as well. Jason, Jovan, always a pleasure talking Lakers basketball with you guys. This was awesome. And hopefully when we talk again, the Lakers have a few more wins under their belt.
It was good to see you guys. Cool. Yeah, we got a bunch of big games on the horizon. It's going to be fun to watch.
Quick note for everybody, we're going Tuesday next week, not Monday, because we're going to react to both the Denver and Houston games.
Oh, I did want to throw this one real quick. Sorry. Kevin said his son started playing basketball around the Luka trade. Now he's an obsessed Laker fan, watches games together, and adding Lakers Nation and Buho's post game to the itinerary. Be in the lookout for 12-year-old boys sending super chats on Saturday. All right. We will.
Thank you, Kevin. Prepared. Appreciate that.
Appreciate that.
I'll try not to curse.
Yes. Yeah, we will try not. That's a good call. We will try not to curse. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a wonderful weekend. Till next time. See you and stay safe.